Hello, hello, everyone. I'm Rob Wolf, and welcome to episode number 54 of Unformidable, where we take a look at some of the less heralded myths in our beloved franchise's quirky history, because to us, every player who dons the orange and blue is, in some way or another, unformidable. Now, first and foremost, many thanks to Christian Romo for filling in last week with a delightful pod. Hearing their take on Brian Bannister was delightful. I thought it was fantastic, made me feel somewhat extraneous, but so it goes sometimes, and that was a great player to choose as well. I was trying to decide who to cover this week. I've gotten some suggestions from you guys, which I really appreciate, and I will definitely be incorporating some of those over in the next few weeks in the summer, things that people have suggested to me online. This week, I had been thinking about over the last couple of weeks. I've really been dwelling on the fact that I've been able to return to Citi Field twice, in fact, since late April, including the Matt Harvey game. And I used to, once upon a time, collect my ticket stubs, you know, when ticket stubs were a thing. And I have a running Excel file of every Met game I've attended, and yeah, I didn't visit it in 2020, just like I didn't visit the Mets home stadium in 2020. And I actually really started reminiscing as I was able to go back to that file. Turns out the last full Met seasons where I did not attend a game were 1981 and 1982. I went to my first game in 79. Back then I could only go to one game a year. Basically, you know, if I could talk my dad into it, I think, and from what I remember, between the baseball strike and probably dad just being cheap or not wanting to drive from the Bronx to Queens, it seems I didn't go to a game in 1981 or 1982. So I'm taking myself back in my reminiscing to 1980 and to the winning pitcher in the first Mets win I ever attended and the third Mets game I ever attended. And really one of the first players I remember truly irrationally loving and trying to imitate in Little League, as I suspect a disproportionate number of kids did for such a non-successful player, because lots of young New Yorkers very briefly loved the Brooklyn-born, loose-limbed, wild-haired, and most importantly, hat-optional pitcher, Mr. John Pacella. John Lewis Pacella was born on September 15th, 1956, in Brooklyn, New York, where I sit right now to record this. Although he and his family moved out to Long Island when he was young, 1965. So John attended high school in Bohemia, New York, and he excelled there at baseball, going 21-4 in three seasons. And high school out there, he could be wild, but he threw quite hard, so had drawn the attention of scouts, in particular scouts for the local team, as he was drafted out of high school by the hometown New York Mets in the fourth round of the 1974 MLB draft. Pacella signed and slowly but steadily made his way through the system. 1976, at the age of 19, he was at AA Lynchburg, where he went 12-11 with a 3.26 ERA. Today, you know, well, that sounds pretty astounding. You know, I think a 19-year-old, today people might look at some of his underlying numbers, such as his 83 walks and 119 strikeouts in 183 innings, and realize that the young man at best needed some seasoning, or at worst might not be quite such a promising prospect. But, you know, it was 1976, and those advanced metrics were not at people's fingertips, and the Mets were about to trade away the franchise, Tom Seaver, within less than a year, and were about to descend into one of the more moribund periods of a frequently moribund franchise. But at any rate, well, not exactly tearing up the minors at age 20 in AA or AAA, Pacella would come up to make his major league debut in 1977 for a September call-up. Granted, lots of players get the September call-up. I don't really know the circumstances, but you know, I can't help but wonder if perhaps bringing up a 21-year-old Brooklyn-born kid in 1977 to distract from some of the stench of the Seaver trade might have had some appeal. But at any rate, John Pichella got in a handful of games in 1977, debuting against the Philadelphia Phillies on September 15th, 1977, making his major league debut on his 21st birthday, mind you. So, I'm sure he really went out and got drunk that night. Was 21 even the drinking age then? I mean, regardless of the drinking age then, I hope he got drunk that night. But I digress. The Mets were taking on a Philadelphia Phillies team that was about to pull away from the Pittsburgh Pirates and clinch the 1977 NL East title. And the Mets would not play spoiler on September 15th, 1977. Starting pitcher Craig Swan walked 5 batters in the first inning, surrendering 3 runs on 0 hits in what quickly turned into a laugher. So Pichella came in to mop up over his last 2 innings, pitching a scoreless bottom of the 7th, working around a Gary Maddux double. He did surrender 2 unearned runs in the 9th, thanks to 2 errors by one by himself and one by Doug Flynn that allowed 2 runs to score. So 2 innings, 2 runs, none earned, 2 hits, 2 walks, no strikeouts in the Mets 8-2 defeat. Fun fact, as far as I could find in my research, I'm not 100% sure this is correct, but to the best of my knowledge, the only other Met to make their debut on their birthday, the one and only Wilmer Flores, a scant 36 years later. Pichella would throw single perfect innings in his only other 2 appearances at the end of that 1977 season, and wouldn't make the team at all in 1978, mastering AA but faring poorly in AAA. And in 1979, he wouldn't make the team again until once again getting a September call-up. This time he would enter the starting rotation in September as opposed to making a few relief appearances. In the first start of his career on September 18th of 79, Pichella pitched well, allowing only 2 runs in 6 innings, but he got out-dueled by Rick Rushel of the Cubs, and the Mets went down 2-0, the only 2 runs of the game, courtesy of a 2-run single by Dave Kingman. I couldn't believe that he knocked in runs without a home run, but it happened. In his next start, Pichella wouldn't get out of the first inning. He'd in a third of an inning, he'd surrender 4 runs to the Cardinals, but he would pitch fine in his finale, in the season finale, once again against the Cardinals, going 6 innings, allowing only 1 run and striking out 7. He left in line for the win, but the bullpen would blow that for him, depriving him, for the time being, of his first career victory. It would be in 1980 when Pichella would spend his only full season in the majors with the Mets and briefly become a little bit of a cult hero, less because of his results, though he did, once he entered the starting rotation, he did have a nice little run where he won his first 3 decisions, a couple in memorable fashion, but more than anything because of the quirk of his windup. The hard-throwing, high-effort Pichella had a pretty herky-jerky, high-effort windup. I believe I remember him being likened to a right-handed John Candelaria, but in his case, the windup and the motion and effort and the, not to mention his curly, somewhat poofy hair combined for the unique effect that John Pichella's cap flew off his head on virtually every pitch he threw. It was delightful and hysterical and somehow very Metsy. He started the season in the bullpen and pitched pretty well out of the bullpen through the first half of the season, posting a 3.62 ERA through early June when he got moved into the starting rotation. Over his first 4 starts, he only pitched beyond 4 innings once. And just in case you started watching baseball in 2021, that was once considered very bad for a starting pitcher. However, starting on June 27th, Pichella went on a little run. He was matched up that day against Steve Carlton and the eventual 1980 World Champion Phillies with quite an impressive lineup. And our young righty out-dueled the famed lefty Steve Carlton, matching zeros with them through 5 innings before the Mets got to Carlton for 3 runs in the 6th, staking Pichella to a 3-0 lead. He had the proverbial lockdown inning, a very impressive one, pitching a scoreless sixth inning, striking out Mike Schmidt and Greg Luzinski. He did tire in the seventh, surrendering a two-run home run to Bob Boone, but Tom Houseman came in to pitch the final three innings and preserve Pichella's first major league win. And how about that for a first major league win, defeating Steve Carlton? Also fun to point out that, again, though this is in the middle of a really desolate stretch of Mets baseball from 77 to 83, Mets actually started a little frisky there in 1980. It was a new ownership that we didn't know would ultimately be terrible, a new GM, and, I mean, not that they really went about rebuilding the team yet, but perhaps there was some new hope there. I'm a little young to have appreciated all that. All I knew is that the NL East in June, July of 1980 was pretty much a clusterfuck with four teams within 6.5 games of first place, including the New York Mets, who were 32 and 36 at that point, and only four games behind the Phillies after that, after Pichella outdueled Carlton. And from what I remember, I was not quite 6 years old, but I was excited. And I was particularly excited by this wild man who was so committed to pitching that his hat flew off his head every time he threw the baseball. The Mets were, by their late 70s, early 80s standards, successful. The team was on the outskirts of a pennant race. It was very exciting, and Pichella would continue to excel over his next four starts, far and away the best stretch of his career, including July 2nd, 1980, when I got to see my newly minted idol in person. And he would get his revenge on Rick Rushel, I'd like to imagine, for defeating him in his first major league start, outdueling him for a 3-1 Met victory. Probably the best start of his career, Pichella surrendered a leadoff walk to Ivan De Jesus and then proceeded to retire 13 batters in a row, carrying a no-hitter into the fifth inning. In that fifth inning, it would be broken up by a double to Barry Foote, and the Cubs would plate their only run of the game thanks to a triple by Mike Tyson. Nope, not that one. And those would be the only two hits Pichella would allow over 7 1/3 impressive innings, bringing the Mets, I believe, as close as 3.5 games out of first place, within a game of 500 as the midway point of the season approached. And yeah, at least in my brief lifetime, that was as good as the Mets had been. Then does beg the question, why did I start rooting for them? But I'm sure we all ask ourselves that once in a while. His third start in that stretch, the Mets took on the Cardinals. The team was 39-41, and Pichella went six innings, surrendered two runs, and left with a 6-2 lead. But unfortunately, the bullpen would blow it, and the Mets would eventually fall in extra innings to the Cardinals, 8-6. Then in start four of the Pichella era, he would surrender no runs in 6 2/3 innings, recording his third win in four starts, this time against the Braves. He walked none, which was incredibly rare for him. I didn't go through all his starts, but wouldn't shock me if that is the only start of his career where that was true. He would strike out seven and bring the Mets even to 500 at 43-43.
Jonah, have you ever thought that maybe the Star Wars prequel movies were onto something?
Excuse me?
Dave, you're entering real Nerf Herder territory here. Careful.
Maybe Star Wars was always meant to be a giant cartoon. And maybe our guest Patton Oswalt agrees with me.
You don't need to keep telling the Skywalker saga finally comes to an end. It came to an end in Return of the Jedi. That was the saga. That was those three movies. I don't need to see the other stuff. Just think of all new characters.
I'm Dave Schilling.
And I'm Jonah Ray. We're the hosts of Galaxy Brains, a podcast for movies, TV, and completely overthinking. Tune in and follow Galaxy Brains on Apple Podcasts or your favorite podcast app.
And just like that, it was over. Well, not exactly, but the win made Pichella 3-0 for the season. It was the last win he'd record as a New York Met, and actually the next-to-last win of his Major League career. Over his next four starts, he would revert to a pumpkin that couldn't keep its hat on its head straight while it pitched, of course, so that novelty was still there, but he wouldn't get out of the third inning in any of those starts, walking between 3 and 5 batters a game over these short outings, and eventually getting himself pulled from the rotation. And alas, the 1980 Mets would fade fast, too. From 43-43, the team would finish 67-95, so that would be 24-52 over the last nearly half of the season. And in the 1980 offseason, the Mets would ship Pichella and Jose Moreno to the San Diego Padres for Randy Jones, a junk-balling former Cy Young Award winner well past his prime. Randy Jones was pretty miserable as a Met over 1981 and 1982. Granted, the Mets didn't give up much. Pichella did not have much success after he left the Mets, but by God, at least his hat came off his head when he pitched, unlike Randy Jones. Pichella would spend 81 with the Padres organization in spring training, but would actually get traded to the Yankees right before the start of the season. He'd spend all of 81 in AAA Columbus for the Yankees. In 1982, he would make 3 appearances for them in April of 1982, including 1 start that he lost to the Texas Rangers, before getting traded to the Minnesota Twins in May of 1982. And that would actually be Pichella's last extended stint in the majors, if you want to call it extended. He spent most of the 82 season in the Minnesota bullpen. He made 18 appearances, finished 7 games, recorded 2 saves, but was largely ineffective. He had a 7.32 ERA, 51 innings, 37 walks, 20 strikeouts. Thereafter, he would bounce. I believe he was in the Orioles and Tigers organizations for the last 4 years of his career. He'd get in 6 games for the Orioles in 1984 and 5 games for the Tigers in 1986, which was his last major league action of his career. He did pitch in the Japanese League in Yokohama in 1987, and back in the Tigers organization in 1988 in the minor leagues before retiring. And he is in his post-playing career, he worked as a pitching instructor at high schools in Ohio, where he lives, and he's been inducted into the Suffolk Sports Hall of Fame on Long Island. The career numbers are not too pretty for his career, according to Baseball Reference. B-War, Pichella was negative 2.9 WAR below replacement level. He threw 191 and 2/3 innings in his major league career. He recorded a 4-10 record with a 5.73 ERA, appeared in 74 games, made 21 starts, did record 3 saves in his career. As a Met, he was 3-6, again getting all those 3 wins in a 4-start span. With a 4.83 ERA, 104 of those innings, 65 walks, 81 strikeouts, 4.83 ERA. Actually, a 3.75 FIP. That was better than I would have imagined. And actually, just a negative 0.4 WAR over his 3 years as a Met. It's really that year in Minnesota where he... It's actually good for negative 1.8 WAR over his 21-game 7.32 ERA stint. That really makes his career numbers look a little more disappointing than you'd like. But we'll always have 1980, and we'll always have those glorious memories of that Met hat flopping to the ground. Not just thanks to memories, but thanks to Topps Baseball, perhaps one of the more memorable Met cards you can find, because he did spend the entire 1980 season with the Mets, so if you find yourself a 1981 Topps John Pichella baseball card, you will see that mop of curly hair, you'll see that right arm coming over the top, and you will see that Met cap about to hit the dirt of the pitching mound on its way down from his head. That journey it memorably made during the 1980 season. even on the back of the card where, you know, you'd often see fun stats like, you know, so-and-so won the Rookie of the Year award, or, you know, the blurb on the back of his card simply read, John has the unique habit of losing his cap after every pitch, as if he didn't gather that from the front of the card. Thanks for clarifying, Tops. And thank you, John Pagella, for some wonderful, quirky, completely Metsy memories. Thank you for taking the time to listening to Unformidable. Please go to AmazonAvenue.com for more Mets-related content. Please follow us on all of the social medias, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and wherever you find this and any and all of our amazing podcasts, please leave us a review. It really helps us out. Original music by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, WOLFFRR, and the show is at Unformidable. Thank you, and as always, let's go Mets.